September 10, 2024, Board of Adjustment meeting will come to order. Mr. Zenner, would you call the roll?
Yes, Mr. Norgard?
I'm present.
Ms. Hammond?
Here.
Mr. Minshew?
Here.
Ms. Rogers?
Here.
And Mr. Old?
Here.
You have five members. You have a quorum, sir.
All right, thank you. So the agenda was distributed. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
I make a motion, Minshew.
Hammond.
All right. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Any against? Nope. Okay. So the June 11, 2024 minutes were distributed to the members of the board. Are there any corrections or additions to the minutes?
I'd like to ask that the staff attorney's name be added to the staff list of who was in attendance, so it would be known easily.
We'll do that moving forward then from now on. Is that what your intent is, Ms. Hammond? Not a problem. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Are there any other comments, corrections, or additions? Okay, seeing none, as amended, is there a motion to approve?
No move.
Second.
Second by Mr. Olson? Old.
Okay.
All right, would the court reporter please swear in staff?
Would you like to take a vote on that?
Oh, yes, that's a good point. So, motion was approved. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any against? No. Sorry.
I didn't hear the question. I'm sorry.
Oh, we were voting in the minutes.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. Had a momentary brain freeze. All right. Now would the court reporter please swear in the staff?
Yes, I do.
All right. So we will be reading or hearing case number 219-2024, a request of Jonathan C. Browning, attorney on behalf of Yankee Ridge LLC, the owners, seeking approval to use cottage optional development standards on the property addressed as 2899 Creasy Springs Road to facilitate the development of a 118-lot subdivision to be known as Bennett Ridge as required by section 29-6.4J of the Unified Development Code. Said real estate being a tract of land located in the southeast quarter of section 35, township 49 north, range 13 west, Columbia, Boone County, Missouri, being a part of tract 1 and tract 2 of the survey recorded in book 5764, page 100, and part of the tract described by the quitclaim deed recorded in book 5593, page 104, and being more particularly described as follows. Beginning at the southwest corner of said tract 1 of the survey recorded in book 5764, page 100, thence with the lines of said survey, north 35 degrees, 32 minutes, 0 seconds east, 141.5 feet, thence north 20 degrees, 7 minutes, 0 seconds west, 136.5 feet to the east line of street easement recorded in book 698, page 145. Thence, leaving the lines of said survey and with the east line of said street easement, 330.87 feet along a 994.93-foot radius non-tangent curve to the left. Said curve having a chord north 1 degree, 53 minutes, 20 seconds west, 329.35 feet. Thence north 11 degrees, 25 minutes, 0 seconds west, 353.28 feet. Thence 140.1 feet along a 1,392.4-foot radius curve to the right. Said curve having a chord north 8 degrees, 32 minutes, 5 seconds west, 140.04 feet. Thence leaving said east line north 100. North 84 degrees, 20 minutes, 50 seconds east, 181.82 feet. thence south 10 degrees, 6 minutes, 50 seconds east, 268.13 feet, thence north 84 degrees, 25 minutes, 20 seconds east, 696.87 feet to the center line of the 20-foot-wide tract described by the grant of easement for sewer purposes recorded in Book 1850, page 825. Thence, with said center line, south 36 degrees, 17 minutes, 25 seconds east, 165.0 feet. Thence, south 45 degrees, 28 minutes, 15 seconds east, 215.85 feet. Thence, south 8 degrees, 0 minutes, 40 seconds east, 180.85 feet. Thence, south 9 degrees, 5 minutes, 40 seconds west, 185.9 feet. Thence, south 17 degrees, 17 minutes, 25 seconds west, 163.0 feet. Thence, south 43 degrees, 34 minutes, 55 seconds west, 216.65 feet. Thence, south 31 degrees, 37 minutes, 25 seconds west, 35.95 feet to the south line of said tract 2. Thence, leaving said center line and with said south line north 82 degrees, 50 minutes, 40 seconds west, 892.96 feet to the point of beginning and containing 22.26 acres. Bearings are referenced to grid north of the Missouri State Plain Coordinate System Central Zone from GPS observations, known as or located at 2899 Creasy Springs Road.
Congratulations, Mr. Norgaard.
Could you repeat the part in the middle?
Yes. Okay, let me see where we're at here. Is there any board member who has anything to disclose about this case? Please do so now. All right, Mr. Liaison, has the notice been properly advertised?
Yes, it was, sir.
Has the property been posted with a notice of public hearing?
Yes, it has.
And has the parties of interest been notified?
Yes, they were.
And were there any inquiries?
Single inquiry, phone inquiry, requesting just general information.
Okay, thank you. Would the person making application to the board please come forward, state your name and address to the court reporter, and then be sworn in.
Good evening. My name is Jonathan Browning. My address is, I'm actually from Jefferson City. My address is 305 East McCarty Street, Jefferson City, Missouri, 65101. That's my office address. I'm the attorney for Yankee Ridge, LLC. We submitted the application before you all back on July 29th, 2024. And of course, we're seeking approval of the cottage development standards, use of cottage development standards. This evening, I'm joined by Brian Harrington.
Can I interrupt you for a second? Would you please be sworn in?
I'm sorry. I do. Thank you, and I apologize for jumping the gun. Again, Jonathan Browning on behalf of the applicant, Yankee Ridge, LLC. Again, my address is 305 East McCarty Street, Jefferson City, Missouri, 65101. I'm joined tonight by Brian Harrington with Allstate Consultants. Mr. Harrington is much more versed in the development plan, so I'd like to turn it over to him with your permission.
Do so.
Thank you.
Mr. Harrington, please state your name, address, and swear in.
Brian Harrington with Allstate Consultants at 3312 Lamone Industrial Boulevard, Columbia, Missouri, 65202. Good evening. I'll keep this rather brief. I'm starting to lose my voice, so try not to do that before I finish. But we're excited to bring this before you. We're requesting the permission to use the cottage standards. The process, as we understand it, is we had to rezone to R2 to allow this to come before you, and then we will go back with a preliminary plat that solidifies it, and then ultimately a final plat. The preliminary plat has already been filed. It's already been gone through planning and zoning, and assuming that we are able to move forward after this, we'll take it on through the city council. We're seeking 118 cottage lots on the 22 acres that you described, on a tract that is bounded by Creasy Springs to the west and Bear Creek to the north and east, and then by individual tracts to the south that front on Proctor Drive. We know that in the staff report, Mr. Zinner noted that we needed to establish minimums for the setbacks. We alluded to them in our request, but I do want to state right now that we are fully supportive with the minimums that he suggested, the 20-foot front yard setback, the 6-foot side yard, 10-foot rear yard, and 30-foot minimum width, lot width. Because of the terrain on this, we expect most of our lots to be around 40 feet because it is a rather steep terrain. So we'll need a little bit of extra width in order to make the transitions between the buildings. We believe we meet all the requirements of the cottage zoning. We're excited about the opportunity to put some reasonably priced homes in an area that is a beautiful area. We'll have immediate access to the Bear Creek Trail and then immediate access onto Creasy Springs, which is an improved roadway. We don't anticipate any significant traffic problems or parking problems with this. We will meet all the requirements of the city on parking on this as well. I think with that, I'll ask if you have any questions of me.
Are there any questions?
So I have one, Mr. Harrington. So there's a row of houses that I take it back up to Creasy Springs Road. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And you're proposing that a 10-foot rear setback is adequate for those?
Yeah, and in reality, we're going to shoot for more like 25. That's what we had, but we'd like to have that flexibility. There is in the property line the right-of-way line of Creasy Springs, there's a jog in there that actually pulls way back away from the road in one location. So those we might get closer to the 10-foot, but it won't effectively be any closer to Creasy Springs Road. The buildings won't. It's just there's a wider right-of-way in part of that. But most of our homes will be at least 25 feet with setbacks.
And if Creasy Springs Road is ever widened into that right-of-way, how does that affect if there's 10-foot rear?
So part of the platting process right now is we are, for the portions that aren't already wide, we're dedicating an additional 3 or 4 feet, I think, to meet the current standard. That standard, my understanding, is to allow for a future widening of the roadway, so it really wouldn't affect that setback.
I have another question. So, thoughts here. So, why would you ever, there's mentioned in the staff report about perhaps needing a variance to allow for on-street parking. Why would you need that if you meet these setbacks and the requirements?
Variance for on-street parking?
On-street parking. Mm-hmm.
So I don't think we're requesting a variance for the
no,
off-street
you're not.
Parking. Yeah. So what the requirements of the city are is we would have to have 2 parking spaces on our tract for each lot. Mm-hmm. And we fully intend to meet those. So we're not anticipating having to do any variance for any parking.
Any further questions? All right, thank you, Mr. Harrington. We may call you back up at the end. Is there anybody else in the audience wishing to speak in favor of this application? Please come forward now.
Oh, I had a question I wanted to ask.
Okay. Is there anybody in the audience wishing to speak against this applicant? Please come forward now. Please state your name and address and swear in.
Patrick Kane, K-A-N-E, 2380 East Oakland Church Road, Columbia, Missouri. I'm speaking tonight as a 20-year park patroller at Bear Creek, and so my interests are certainly around what it will be, how it will be different in terms of that area. The private property sign that they have put up is very close to the Bear Creek Trail, and I don't know, they'd have to speak to where buildings, the houses, as far as that goes. I don't know. I just saw the notice a couple of days ago. So I don't know how it will change. I know it'll be a mess in terms of so many people that close to the trail, and that may not be the, that may not relate to the values here. I just wanted to put in a vote for the trail. I've been out there 20 years, and I hope I'm out there 20 more. They'll probably be pushing me if I am, but that's okay.
Thank you, Mr. Kane. Are there any questions from the board?
So you're just concerned about the numbers of people and if there's any building close to the trail?
The private property sign is within an acorn's throw of the trail.
Thank you.
Can I ask you, what would be different? Like, I live off Stadium in 63, and we have a trail that was put in right behind our houses. In fact, they had to put a fence up, so the trail is literally right next to someone's fence. But what would be the difference with the trails that got put in, that were put in right next to homes, as opposed to putting homes in next to where the trail already exists?
Well, the homes that are now close to Bear Creek, of course, many of them were already there, and the number of people is much less than the 118 cottages and the people that inhabit them would be. It would be much more population intensive.
So is the question's not really about the structures, it's about the number of people that would be accessing the trail?
Yeah, and how close that is to the trail. There's nothing else anywhere near that close. It's right, if you walk it, if you go west towards, walking west towards the boardwalk out there, you can see the private property sign, and it's just really close to the trail, so it would make a huge difference compared to the way it is now.
Have you talked with the developer by any chance, or
no?
Talked with the city about this?
No, I just found out about this a couple of days ago.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
I'd seen the sign, but we didn't know what it meant. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, thanks.
Assuming the development goes through, would you have any suggestions on how to deal with your concerns as far as the trail quality or usage or whatever?
I'm surprised that nobody from Parks and Rec is here, besides this old volunteer here. And so it would take some looking at and some planning, certainly, to keep it anywhere close to it would be so different with that, if the buildings are that close and there's, and with that many, well, they'll have to speak to that. I can't, but.
And perhaps Mr. Harrington and Mr. Zinner can answer your questions.
I'm sorry?
Perhaps Mr. Harrington or Mr. Zinner can answer your questions about that, looking at the diagram of the development.
Yeah, I would think that there would be some history where somebody's done this before, close to trails and a development of this size. So probably there's some ways to look at what's been done.
Okay, thank you.
So what do you think would be a good distance? Personally, what do you think would be?
Well, Kitty, a good distance, to me, it would be at least in the wooded area. Or at least, I don't know how much of the wooded area will be left in that spot. So I speak out of ignorance related to that, not knowing.
Okay, well, if there's no further questions, we'll invite Mr. Harrington back up. He may have some answers for you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Kane brings up good questions. We worked hard to preserve that park, trail corridor. We're 300 plus feet away from the trail with our cottages. We've dedicated, or we will be dedicating as part of the platting process, tree preservation area in there, as well as stream buffers. So we will be well off the trail. We'll also have some of our stormwater detention, which we're gonna try to treat as an amenity and a wet pond in some of that area. But that's roughly 9.5 acres that we're dedicating to tree preservation and buffer area to that in just a common area lot. So I hope that answers the question. But we won't be close to the trail with that, other than our trail connection where we will come into.
So will there be, I mean, I assume 300 feet's pretty far, but it's still within eyesight of a trail if there were.
When the leaves are off, it will be in eyesight. When the leaves are on, it probably would not be very noticeable. But
is the topology of this tract such that you're on the edge of a hill looking down into the valley where the trail creek is?
So it is, but it varies. The northernmost part of this tract comes to a narrow point. That part is right along where the boardwalk portion of the trail is. That's kind of a bluff that goes up to the top of it, and we're leaving that completely undisturbed, that part of it. As you get away from the boardwalk farther to the east, it opens into more of a bottomland type area. That is where we're also keeping around 300 feet. Now, our stormwater infrastructure will intrude into that 300 feet, but the cottages will be at least 300 feet off that. And then from that point up, it goes up the hill, and then there's a significant terrain elevation difference. I think it's around 80 feet of climb through that.
But you're saying 300 feet as in a football field, 100 yards, just for reference, and how far that would be.
And the trees are mature in that area, so they will provide a good buffer. I can't honestly say that I know that they won't be, you won't be able to see the cottages, but they will be a ways away.
Understood.
So since you're back up here, what's the price point for these cottages?
Don't know for sure, but our target is around 250,000, between 200,000 and 300,000, but 250 is kind of our target right now.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else from you may? Mr. Kane is speaking once again.
I don't know if you do field trips or not, but if you go, I'd suggest that you walk that part of the trail and look at where the no trespassing private property sign is, and at least you'd have that visual for what it looks like. How close it is, because like I said, the private property sign is an acorn's throw away from the trail, and certainly I don't know how the regulations would how they would be held to in the sense of the football size field away.
I'll right. deal with I, this with my comments, please.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, is there anybody in the audience wishing to speak for or against this application? Please come forward, state your name, address, and be sworn in.
I'm Pam Mock. I live at 2380 East Oakland Church Road, and I've been walking the trail, walk it three or four times at least a week.
Need to be.
And, I'm wondering how, we talk about cottages, how many cottages are there going to be? How dense is it going to be? And with that kind of population, you know, what is that going to do to the trail? I would prefer to keep it just pristine woods. The first time I knew about this was sometime last year, two or three machinery came in and just went through and tore down a lot of the trees right there and a lot of the brush, and then private property signs were put up. And everyone that I saw walking the trail, we were wondering what is going on and what's being put in so close to the trail. So it's been kind of a mystery. So just seeing just a few days ago, the notice kind of gave us some answers. So I'm very concerned about how close it is. I understand it goes up the hill. And I understand, if I understand what you're saying, that the part by the boardwalk is going to be left. But it is, you know, again, to start the whole process by tearing down trees, and I know part of it was brush, but they were just in there doing that. Maybe you could tell me when that was. It was sometime last year because I was walking the trail when they were doing it. And so it started with taking down trees. No notice of what was going on, so.
So I think 117 cottages.
117. Thank you. That's all I wanted to say, so.
Thank you.
I'm obviously against it, so.
Thank you. All right, is there anybody else in the audience? And please come forward, state your name and address, and be sworn in.
Is Dorothy Gray. I live at 3101 Carmelo Rock Drive, zip 65202 here in Columbia in Monterey Hills. I do. I moved here 5 years ago to be with family, and I was so excited to find so many trails since I'm a longtime hiker and mountain climber in my younger days. So I hiked all the trails around Columbia. And I picked Creasy Springs Trail, A, because it was the closest to my house. I could get there in 7 minutes. But B, it was the most pristine trail, and there weren't a deluge of college students and bicycle. There was just less traffic. So I love it for that reason. Now, I am concerned about increased traffic. We've already got all the quarry trucks up and down the road, and that's, you know, dangerous in its own right. Where I'd like to know where the entrance is going to be into this area if it goes through. Of course, I'm hoping it does not.
Mr. Sinner, are you going to put up a map?
I don't have a graphic. The graphics that were provided in your packet were provided. There is an entrance directly across from the towing facility that is on Creasy Springs.
From the what facility?
There is a towing facility on the west side of Creasy Springs Road. That is one of the entrance points. The second entrance point is off of Emery Drive, which comes off of Proctor. So those two locations have been evaluated by our city's traffic engineer. They are compliant with the city's requirements. So the project at this point, from a preliminary platting perspective, has been evaluated for full compliance with the city's regulatory provisions, and hence the reason for this action here this evening,
occurring before the preliminary plat. It has to, because we cannot take that preliminary plat forward with lots that are smaller than what would otherwise be allowed, or any other aspect of the development proposal that would not be compliant. So it does meet our compliance requirements. So with that being said, those accesses, based on the total number of lots, is also consistent with our fire code requirements for 2 points of ingress and egress.
Thank you. Well, you put in 118 dwellings and two cars per, you know, you've got hundreds of cars going in and out of this area. Things are going to change, and I know life changes, but this is one I hope doesn't change. It's just too many people, too much for that pristine little trail. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else in the audience wishing to speak for or against this proposal? Please come forward, state your name and address, be sworn in.
My Kalina Keith. My address is 6315 River Birch Place, Columbia, Missouri, 65202. I would like for this not to happen. we visit the trail
can
a
you,
lot.
Can you?
I'm sorry. Oh, am I not close enough? Sorry.
Thank you.
I'm nervous.
That's okay.
My family of three, we visit the trail a lot. We love hiking it, biking it. We moved here roughly 3.5 years ago. And we first went there, and I for the first time saw lightning bugs, and it was the coolest thing. And I feel like the adding the subdivisions was 118, how many? 117 subdivisions is going to add light pollution to the trail, and we're not going to be able to see the beautiful lightning bugs in summer. I'm sure you guys have all enjoyed that growing up in Columbia, if you grew up here or went here. And so I have a concern for the light pollution going in houses, and also the wildlife. Disrupting a ton of wildlife that is near to the trail. When we go on hikes, we like to see all the deer and the squirrels and the birds, and my son's growing up, and I don't want him to miss out on that because there's more houses built on trails.
I kind of have one. I don't know if it's appropriate to ask, but what entity maintains the trail, if there is one?
It's the city of Columbia maintains it. It's a city trail.
Are you talking about the connector to the trail or the trail itself?
Well, I mean, there's concerns in the audience over the development contributing to the deterioration of the trail. I know in other areas, you know, when there's erosion, there's an organization comes in and pours in gravel, repairs it or whatever. So the city of Columbia maintains this trail then.
So do you come in from the Crazy Springs side?
I do.
Oh, okay. I don't know where that entrance is to the trail.
I think that's the one under the bridge, right, guys? It's like kind of over by the bridge.
And is it? Well, and so, I'm sorry. I don't know if that's how close that is to this development.
It's very close to my understanding. I'm also concerned about on the sign there was it mentioned criminal. What was it? Just a different criminal activity that might be introduced into the area because the increase of population being brought to the trail. And so that's also a concern. With more people, more crime will happen in that area. That's kind of supposed to be a safe place for families to enjoy recreation.
Do you walk on some of the other trails in Columbia?
I do.
And so you know that most of them go past the backyards of houses or sometimes in between houses. You've seen that?
Yes.
Okay.
I just wanted to make that point that there's lots of trails by lots of houses in Columbia, and I don't know that we have a huge crime problem, but maybe other people would contradict me on that. But
yeah, that's just something that I would not like to see a bunch of strange, I guess not strange, but a bunch of people, you know, that are not familiar with 117 houses, that's going to welcome, if it's a family of four, quite a few individuals that could introduce more crime to the.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Any more individuals wishing to speak for or against, please come forward now. State your name and swear in. Name and address.
My name is Caitlin Keith. I live at 6315 River Birch Place here in Columbia. Yes. Yeah, so I have I'm part of the family that my wife just brought up. So I have some of the same concerns. My other concern too is I don't know if it was mentioned with building 117 lot division, what's that going to do for the parking? That is for people who are trying to access the trail who may not live in the area. So is that going to be maintained? Are they going to have adequate parking to accommodate 118 subdivisions and people that may be coming to that area just to enjoy the trail itself?
So are you asking about whether there's accommodations at the park for the additional vehicular load, or?
Yeah, because if you go to the parking lot right there on Creasy Springs, it's a very small parking lot, so you can fit, 15, 20 cars in there? So if you're going to be building a huge subdivision there, are they going to get rid of that lot, or are they going to, you know, increase parking in that area so then that way, you know, people aren't parking on the streets trying to get access to the trail, or parking in the neighborhood even themselves to get access to the trail?
I'll let Mr. Zenner respond to that, but I don't think that Parks and Recreations is connected to this project, so.
They are not, and the subdivision is proposing its own principal connection to the trail, therefore allowing access for their residents to not have to take a vehicle to the parking lot. They would be able to access the trail and enjoy it just like any other resident in the city of Columbia does on any of our other trails that have connectors to neighborhoods. By walking to it. The whole idea, again, and the reason nobody is from Parks and Rec is here today is because they reviewed this development proposal as a part of our regulatory review procedures. They are supportive of additional users to our trail system. I think as Mr. Harrington pointed out, there is a stream buffer requirement that is also going to mandate that a buffer be retained between the trail due to the environmental features. So development encroaching within the required regulatory stream buffer is not possible. And the connection to the trail is something that is highly sought after by our Parks and Recreation staff for the benefit of all users. The parking lot that is currently serving access to the trail is a publicly maintained parking lot that anybody can go and use. Unfortunately, what you will find, and we see this in many subdivisions that have trail connections, people park at the end of those subdivision streets to be able to access the trails, to the disdain of many of the neighbors that live in that neighborhood who then have their parking displaced. And so I think it's an issue that the popularity of the trail may need to be addressed or reevaluated as a part of Parks and Rec's regular activities, and if additional parking is needed, they may need to provide that at a later date in order to compensate for increases in usage on the trail. But otherwise, this 117 lots is supported by Parks and Recreation. There have been no comments made by them negative to this development, and it would be very consistent with any other subdivision that's adjacent to a trail. We would seek out trail connections to enhance the availability to our residents. So any development, be it a cottage development or a standard R1 development, would be being encouraged to make this same improvement in potentially generating the same impact that everyone has spoken about this evening. But that is, it's part of the core values of allowing access to our public amenities throughout the city. So, you know, better use the trails are, the more residential development we have in order to do that. We generate income off of the residential development, which helps to maintain the trails, which also then may help to expand the trail system for an even greater and more enhanced use of our trail network. We are a very fortunate community to have as much as we have per capita. And one of the things that attracts people here are those amenities. And so we don't want to just isolate them to a select few. We encourage them to be interconnected to all of our development for the purposes of giving alternative modes of transportation and recreation at the same time.
Yeah, but isn't there an issue there when you say that, so right now the parking lot's kind of smaller, so when you're increasing the access, like you're adding 117 lot division in there, there's going to be obviously more
traffic
there.
Can you
speak up? So when you're increasing the, you know, adding 117 lots, there's going to be more people in the area. There's already concerns brought up about the cluster that's going to be in the area. So you said Park and Recs isn't here to comment, but is there any plans for Parks and Recs that anyone knows about to maybe increase the parking lot for people who don't live in the area?
So the subdivision is providing, they're required to provide 2 off-street parking spaces per house. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a good chance there's not going to be overflow going into any trail lot that I can figure.
Okay.
Would be a situation.
I had a question. Just maybe a thought that, you know, when the trails were put in, they took private land and made it public land, and they put the trail in. But it wasn't the intention to make the other public land unbuildable because they took the public land publicly, I mean the privately owned land, made it public, put the trail in, and now you can't do anything with the private land, right, because the trail's there. I mean, they put the trail in, what they told everyone when they put the trails in, including in our neighborhood, is that it would become an attraction and would help the value of your property because it's closer to a trail. But the other thing is that, and this is kind of my question, just maybe just a thought, is it possible that because people live that close to the trail, they would use the trail to go to work and maybe the traffic wouldn't be as bad as it would be in another neighborhood that wasn't close to the trail?
I mean, if you're talking about people that are active in, you know, in like walking, bicycling, stuff like that, that can use the trail, but most people do drive cars. So,
well, I understand, but if their trail is close to their house and that is an attraction, then the potential exists that they would take the trail and go to work. It's far more potential than if they didn't live close to a trail that they would take a trail and go to work, right?
Yeah, essentially.
And the trail is for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm just throwing that out there. That's a potential that maybe the trail would be used more, which is what the original intention of putting the trail in was. Not that you would use it less, right?
Yeah, but my main concern is, that's why I talked about the parking issue. So I just want to make sure with whatever's being built that there's going to be adequate parking for people that don't have walking distance access to the park. They're going to have to drive there. We have to drive there.
So if they're in their neighborhood, you think what you're worried about is them going to the trail parking lot and parking in the trail parking lot as opposed to being at their house? Or
Yes, essentially that. Or if, like, just kind of like, you know, there's going to be parking there. Just I want to maintain, because right now there's not that big of a parking spot in the area. So the lot's tiny. So with whenever you're adding subdivisions or any more.
I guess the conundrum for me just personally is that the concern is that the trail will be used more. And that's why we put the trails in. So you come up and you go, we don't want the neighborhood there because it's going to put more people on the trail. But for everybody who voted for the trails and who continues to vote to spend money on the trails, that's like good news. So just me personally, I'm not speaking for anybody else here. It's just the concern that more people will be using the trail that y'all like to use. That's what the trails were intended for.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that they're not intended for that. The only thing that my question is to make sure that there's going to be adequate parking for people that aren't walking distance in this subdivision. So, you know, is there plans to make sure that there's more parking for people who want to drive in?
And that wouldn't be by this developer, because that would be a Parks and Recs thing. And the Parks and Recs department has looked at it, and that's not, I mean, and Mr. Zinner could take that back to him, but at this point, that was not something they were concerned about. And this developer is not going to build a parking lot for the city as part of this deal.
Okay.
Thank you. I think it's good to have some trail advocates here to if going forward. Mm-hmm. Not that you're a member of police or anything, but someone concerned about the trail to keep an eye on things could be a liaison to the Parks and Rec Department if there's any issues or concerns. I think that's great that we're keeping an eye on things, or potentially.
Excuse me, I missed who you are. I didn't hear you.
Ms. Gray, ma'am?
Could you speak to the microphone?
I'm sorry.
Ms. Gray.
I must have missed who you are and what your role is in the...
My name is Pat Zenner. Pat Zenner. I am the Development Services Manager for the City of Columbia.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay. Well, I'm for people being on the trail. That's not it. I can't speak for anything else. I'm talking about buildings there. I've been on all the trails. I'm a long time, been in Columbia 40 years. I've been on all the trails. And this is different. This is not, there's not a neighborhood there that the trail is built around. They're putting in 117, if they want to put in 117 buildings. That's what concerns me. Not that there be more people. More people, that's great. That's what the trails are for. That's what we're known for in Columbia and in Missouri, in fact. Parks and Rec sponsors, Patrick mentioned he's a park patrol. That's a program of Parks and Rec. They're ambassadors on the trail. They don't have any police duties, but they make sure things are safe. You know, they make sure people have their dogs leashed. Patrick's had to report people who were trying to hunt deer on a trail, which is not allowed. So he's there for public safety. But there's a lot of people have spoken to the pristine nature of the trail. So it's not about keeping more people from going. That's great. But it's about the buildings themselves. And, you know, there are other ones that houses were there when they built the trails. But this is different. There are houses that are close by, but they're on a ridge, and they're part of the area around off of Garth. I usually park in the Garth parking lot. But I would suggest you all do a little field trip if you haven't been to Bear Creek Trail, just to get a sense of where this is. And as far as, I don't know when those signs were put up, but I just saw that sign just a few days ago. So I'm hoping there's going to be more chances for people that use the trail to come and talk. Because I didn't know about it till I saw it just about 3 days ago. And it was only put in a couple of different places. So I hope there's more.
Can I ask you a question? Are you aware that they are allowed to put a development in there?
Am I aware
they're allowed to put a development in there? What they're asking for is a denser. They're asking for more density. So smaller lots. But if they didn't do that, they could put a neighborhood in there. They're asking for a variance tonight to make it,
more
houses. Yeah. So instead of 80 or 90, it would be 100, and I don't know exactly what the difference would be. But instead of 80 or 90, it'll be 117. But they're allowed to put the 80 or 90 or whatever that normal density is without a variance.
So you're just arguing against something going in on private land?
To increase the amount of homes. Yes, I think that's, that's a lot.
I just want to make sure you're aware that if they don't get this variance, they can put a development in without our approval at all. And so, I mean, that's part of the reason that a private landowner would give their land away to the park department so they could put the trail in, because it would make it more valuable to put a neighborhood in next to the trail.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to make sure it's not a question of no neighborhood at all or this really dense neighborhood, right? They're asking for a variance from a normal neighborhood to a denser.
Yeah, I understand.
To make for affordable housing, which is really their contention, is to make for more affordable housing. So I just want to make sure.
I get that, it.
Okay.
I get it.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who wishes? We're going to put a cap on. Can we?
Everybody that is here has spoken. We don't generally
we'll keep
allow
taking.
Folks
come
to come
forward
up and have a second one.
No, you can come forward if you need to make some more comments. Hey, restate your name, though, so that we have.
And speak into the microphone for us.
My name is Michaelina Keith. I was concerned, so my husband was speaking about the parking situation, and I just wanted a little bit more clarity. For the parking, you said that it's going to be accommodating. There's going to be another area for the residents to park privately close to the.
Pursuant to our development code, residents of this neighborhood will have a direct access to the trail. And because they are required to park on site, their own vehicles on their personal lot, there is no parking other than their personal parking in a driveway on their personal lot that will be provided internal to the subdivision. They are not building a parking lot for their residents. And there is no proposed expansion of the city's parking lot that presently exists. It is off-site from this project site. So the concern that residents living within the Bennett Ridge subdivision on one of these 117 lots of driving to the parking lot that is off the subdivision's property to access the trail is not seen as an issue because they have their own on-site parking. And they will walk down the trail connection that the developer is building to connect to the Bear Creek Trail.
There's
going
to be like a path to the trail.
Yes, there yes. It is.
Wilderness.
Yes. Yeah, through the wilderness into the property and
from the neighborhood.
From the neighborhood. So that's how the interconnection occurs. Yeah. That's why there wouldn't be any additional traffic going out of the neighborhood.
That would really helpful. Thank you.
Okay.
And then I was curious too, as far as the development, is there going to be more or less like? There needs to be electricity, sewage, and all of these things built into the subdivision. Is this going to disrupt more of the wildlife, and is this going to disrupt any of the nature as of on the?
So, if we any greater disruption than what would have ended up happening if it were to be developed in a conventional manner, no. You still will have to bring in water, sewer, electric. If I'm not incorrect. We have a sewer line that runs through this property that will be tapped into. So you will have electric service that will need to be brought in. You will have water service that needs to be brought in. But that is all being brought in as a part of the road infrastructure that will be constructed to access the lots and would not be coming through the protected environmental areas that are left in the development. The tree preservation areas that Mr. Harrington referred to, the stream buffer, those areas would be preserved. And so what the applicant is attempting to do is, and I would imagine through the design, will come in off of Creasy Springs, loop through the subdivision, and either connect out on Emery, so we're creating a utility loop, or depending on how our utility services are designed, the city designs those utilities, they'll either come back out and connect to the same entry point. But I believe that this subdivision can be fed, so to speak, from two different locations, Emery plus Creasy Springs, which will allow a loop, which increases reliability of services, and also limits the amount of cross-country clearing that would have to be done. And with the sewer line in, which is normally the biggest impact, that actually helps to reduce really the environmental degradation that would occur by having to put a new subdivision in.
That makes sense. It won't be coming in from the backside around the tread, that the sewer and all of that won't be.
Yes.
It's coming in off the street. So.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Any further comments from the public for or against? All right. Mr. Zenner, would you please make comments if you have any to make?
So I think what we. One of the major takeaways here is yes, this property was rezoned recently by City Council. So it went from an agricultural designation on the 22.26 acres that is currently being sought for the cottage development standards to R2. If we were to look at this as a somewhat standard development parcel with about 20% set aside for roads and drainage and other features that would normally be generated, a ballpark estimated density would be about 7 units per acre. The 22 acres with 117 units being built on it basically amounts to about 5 1/4. So the density is significantly less than standard development. Now, mind you, this is a very environmentally impacted tract, and therefore a typical 20% set aside may be a little bit low. But the distinction here is yes, they're doing smaller lots, and the reason for smaller lots is to keep the preservation of the environmentally sensitive features, roughly 29, almost 30 acres of this tract, out of development. So the idea is we're concentrating density in the area that is less environmentally sensitive than the balance of the 52-acre tract. And of the 52-acre tract, only the 22.26 acres was rezoned. 29 acres was left in agricultural zoning, which basically leaves that property undevelopable. So without further action to rezone, you're not going to yield any more development on this parcel than in the southwest corner, as is proposed on the diagrams that were provided to you on the loop. There is a lot that has been created that is in the flats or in the bottomlands, as Mr. Harrington referred to it, that is to the east of the development area that may, provided additional access would be able to be achieved to Proctor, be open for development. But right now, because of our other regulatory standards, that acreage cannot be proposed for platting because it does not meet our fire code access requirements and therefore has been left zoned ag. It would have to come back through another public process to be rezoned. And then if they wanted to do cottage development on it, like they are proposing here on the 22.26 acres, they would have to come back through this body potentially. And as you are well aware, we are looking at making revisions to our zoning code to allow cottage-style lots to occur more concurrently with the platting process, so it could be in the future a Planning and Zoning Commission item. But for right now, we're looking at 117 lots on the 26 acres. Which yields a density of roughly 5.25 units per acre. As I noted earlier, Parks and Recreation is part of the review team that reviews all subdivision-related development activity. They were engaged in this review, and there was no commentary or questions asked of them. As Mr. Harrington pointed out, the preliminary plat does show a connection to the Bear Creek Trail, which would be acquired by separate document, as we do with many of our trail easements. It was not platted as part of a common lot. It's identified crossing a common lot that is within the development, either a tree preservation area or a stormwater common lot, but it is not designated at this point on any document as a trail easement. It may very well be designated on the final plat as one, which will secure its use for connection to the trail for the 117 lots. Internal to the middle of this development is a common lot that is also will be used for some stormwater management, tree preservation, and as a requirement of our code, it does have an internal trail connection within it in order to take and break down the loop street into a compliant road segments. That was a condition that the Planning Commission placed on the preliminary plat to ensure that there was connectivity between the northern loop and the southern loop within the subdivision itself. Again, as we indicated, the traffic generation out of this development did not warrant a traffic study, and that is again a criterion that we evaluate as part of development review. So our traffic engineer is engaged in the development review process as well, and the access points, as I noted, were consistent with our requirements. We will potentially have to do site triangle analysis, at least along Creasy Springs, to ensure that we have adequate horizontal visual access in both directions. So placement of that roadway may shift a little bit in order to ensure that those requirements are met, but that is also a standard that is determined at the time that actual final construction plans are submitted, which would come with a final plat, which is the next step in the platting procedure. The plat is prepared. The preliminary plat is prepared to be introduced on the city council agenda for its October 16th meeting. It is a resolution item, meaning it only requires one reading of city council. But the preliminary plat does not establish any buildable lots. That is the final platting process, which requires two readings of city council, given that it is an ordinance, and it also requires full submission of construction plans for road infrastructure and any other public utility infrastructure that will be built. We do not have those at this point. It is pending the outcome of this hearing this evening, plus the approval of the preliminary plat before the applicant and their design professionals will start to generate those construction drawings and the final platting items. Again, it is not an uncommon process. As Mr. Harrington pointed out, one of the observations the staff made, and I think the confusion about a variance that Ms. Hammond was bringing up, because there was variability as it related to the setbacks that would be being actually prescribed to the development, if no garage were provided, the front yard setback and the cottage development standards would be allowed to be reduced to 10 feet. A 10-foot setback does not provide sufficient lot area in the front of a structure for parking. And therefore, if they had not defined what the actual front setback would be, a variance may have been required. As Mr. Harrington pointed out when he started his comments this evening, the staff's recommendations of a 20-foot front, 6-foot side, and 10-foot rear, along with a 30-foot or 35-foot height maximum, are all acceptable. That is what would be indicative of a garage being provided with each dwelling unit. That's the garage requirement. You have to have a 20-foot setback to have a driveway deep enough to accommodate a vehicle. With that being established, there is no need for a variance. You will have adequate on-site parking, be it either in a driveway and a garage, or all in a two-car garage. These lots are narrow enough, which, as we have seen in many of our other cottage development proposals, there could be a single-car garage, which would account for one of the two required parking spaces, and then a driveway of 20 feet in depth, which allows for an additional vehicle. So as long as the front setback is 20 feet and the paved surface within the required front yard does not exceed 30% of the lot width or 500 square feet, whichever is greater, parking could be entirely in a driveway pad, and the 20 feet allows for that driveway pad to be deep enough to accommodate a standard vehicle not overhanging the sidewalk. So when we look at the opportunities that this development basically permits for addressing our housing availability related issues and other comprehensive plan goal objectives, which is one of the criterion that we evaluate, this does have the opportunity to bring in a diversity of housing from what is to the northeast, which are larger lots that are part of the Vanderveen subdivision and up off of road immediately to the north is escaping me right now, which are more traditional were county lots, and then parts of the neighborhood have come in into the city of Columbia, connected into the Vanderveen subdivision. But this allows for some income integration and housing style integration, which is one of the reasons why we created the cottage development standards to begin with. We wanted to create within our built environment varying opportunities of lot sizes for differences in house sizing in order to allow for more people to be able to have opportunity for home ownership. This particular development and allowing it to be approved would promote that. Smaller houses do not necessarily mean smaller houses provide an opportunity for creating availability. They are not a direct correlation to affordability. And so a $250,000 cottage-sized home may not still be affordable for some individuals, but it is maybe more attainable for others than our more traditional housing that we are seeing built today on contemporary 5,000 or 7,000 square foot lots. As I pointed out earlier as well, we are concentrating the development impact of this project into an area that is less environmentally impacted. The overall acreage, the 52 acres of this entire development parcel that is owned by Yankee Ridge, has about 29 acres of land, probably about 20, that is not really suitable for development at all due to steep slopes and other related elements. So basically, when you're trying to determine how do you make use of that large an acreage, this option provides that ability for you to be able to preserve the most sensitive features and allow that are less sensitive to be developed. The overall density on the property could be much greater if we were to basically remove vegetation, which is permitted. Our tree preservation ordinance requires only 25% of existing climax forest to be preserved. That is the developer's right to come in and remove 75% of the vegetation. What Mr. Harrington's client is proposing to do is preserve 29 acres, basically, of 52. So we are getting a far better end product out of this than would potentially otherwise be allowed if we were to only have R2 development. And the applicant sought R2, has got R2. So the development density, as I pointed out earlier, if this is denied, potentially could be higher and more impactful in the area in question. And so the possibility for that is probably less likely given the environmental characteristics of the land. So instead of 117 units, if it were left to R2, which is a conventional 5,000 square foot lot, instead of 117 lots, we would have reduced the lots and thereby potentially making the property just more expensive and not fulfilling a broader objective of trying to create income diversity and housing diversity. So this allows other comprehensive plan objectives to be met. Aside from the comments that have been made this evening, prior to this hearing, there was no public opposition, and there was no public opposition expressed during the zoning hearing to rezone the 22.26 acres to the R2 district. As pointed out in the staff report, however, we do have a legal non-conforming metal recycler that is off of Proctor that did express some concern about single-family housing coming to their existing non-conforming use. That is an element that the applicant is aware that they are there. And in our world, we refer to that as the new development is coming to an existing nuisance, and resolving those nuisance-related impacts needs to be addressed between the property owner that operates the recycling facility and the developer wanting to put residents near that. That is not something that we will not do enforcement on the legal nonconformity because they were there first. So that was the only comment that we got out of the zoning side when this was brought forward, and it was actually post public hearing by the Planning and Zoning Commission. We are in a residential zoning district, and this type of development would be consistent pursuant to the land use plan. As I've also pointed out, connections to our city's park trail system is something that is highly promoted. Our mobility and connectivity goals and objectives of the comprehensive plan would be fulfilled and facilitated by the trail connections that the applicant is proposing to build. The parking has been addressed with the acceptance of the staff's recommended setback conditions and establishing what the minimum requirements are. And as Mr. Carrington pointed out, most likely lot widths will be greater than that. Lot setbacks, however, will be consistent with the standards established by the cottage development requirements for structures that would have a garage. And so that is very important to note that the 20-foot setback allows us the parking component to be addressed on each individual lot. Lot 118, which on the graphic that was provided to you, which is in the upper northwest corner of the property, is actually not proposed for cottage-style development. That is actually a traditional R1 or R2 lot that would be left for R2 purposes. The lots that are numbered 1, 1 through 117, and then lot 123, which is the common lot, are those that are being sought to be basically entitled for the purposes of the cottage development requirements. There is no sidewalk along Proctor, and this property does not front along Proctor. However, there is sidewalk along Emory, and there is sidewalk existing along Creasy Springs at this point. All internal roadways will be required to have sidewalks, curb and gutter, and be fully improved with all municipal services, water, electric, and sanitary, and storm sewer. With that, that is all my comments. The recommendation that was provided for board's potential action, as indicated by Mr. Harrington, has been accepted. Any motion that is made, I think, is appropriate to reiterate that those are the required dimensional standards that would be applied as the minimums in your motion, given that the application did not necessarily make that inordinately clear. If you have any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them.
Any questions of staff?
I did have one, just clarification on the sidewalks. This new development will have sidewalks?
It is required to build sidewalks along all of the public streets that will be built. So there are three public streets, the Loop, which is two, and then the extension of Emory Drive.
Thank you.
So there's a row, I think I mentioned this, the row of houses that back up to Creasy Springs Road. So as this stands, they could have a 10-foot rear yard setback if we approve the minimums that staff and the developer have recommended. Is that correct?
That is correct. I think if you have been out to the site, the area in which these lots would be located, the road bed for Creasy Springs and the elevation of where those lots would be located is probably 10 to 15 feet, if not more, above the road bed. So while you may be building back on a cliff, the road isn't going to get up to the rear yard of those homes. And therefore, I would contend that there is not, should not be a concern that the road impact would be there. If you're going to expand the road out, you're going to probably have to do something to retain what hillside you're taking away. And it would not be impeding into the platted lots. As Mr. Harrington pointed out, as part of our platting procedure, the additional road right-of-way to ensure that Creasy Springs is an 84-foot-wide minor arterial roadway cross-section is being collected. So all of the lots that are being platted would be platted behind that right-of-way that we are acquiring.
Not a safety issue.
I wouldn't. I mean, I think if you decide you want to clear the trees out along your back property line that overlooks Creasy Springs, it could become a safety issue individually for lot owners. But that ridge line, that top of bank line, is vegetated at this point. And if you don't want to be looking down upon Perry Towing and the roadway, I'm not quite sure why you would be removing your vegetative buffer.
Question. So, per the plat, the developer will put in one or two access points to the trail.
I did not do the plat review, Ms. Hammond. I can let Mr. Harrington answer that question. And it is my understanding, I believe that there was one, and it was coming in from the northeast corner of the property through the common lots. And I think Mr. Harrington will probably provide greater clarity on that.
Exactly right. We're connect one trail connection from the streets back to the trail.
And that'll be mandated when the plat is approved, or the preliminary and final plats are approved.
It's shown on the preliminary at this point, and then would be either dedicated as a trail easement as a part of the final plat recording, or if the lots to the north, which are not required, so the other thing that the board needs to understand is the lots that are outside of the proposed 22.2 26 acres do not need to be final platted. They are shown on a preliminary plat. They are not part of the development proposal at this point. And if the applicant chooses to delay their recording, I would imagine that we are going to want to secure the trail easement, which would then necessitate it being received by a separate document. However, if the applicant chooses to plat all of the 123 lots that are proposed in the subdivision, that is on the 52 acres, the trail easement likely will be requested to be dedicated as a trail easement on that final plat that shows all of the lots.
What we've been given doesn't show all of the lots, does it?
There were two pages to the graphic. The first page was the overall, and then which had the inset, and I believe the second page may have been a more detailed view of just the 22.26 acres.
So, Mr. Zenner, is there any portion of these lots that are not developable from a city standpoint?
Of the lots that are within the 22.26 acres that this request is specifically associated with, no. There are undevelopable portions of lots that lie within the boundary that surround the 22.26 acres, which are identified either as they're agriculturally zoned, one, and then they may be impacted by stream buffer or tree preservation areas that are being utilized in common for the entire acreage.
So if, for instance, this conditional use permit were not approved, what I'm asking is if there were other portions of this entire 52-acre tract which could be converted to residential zoning district and then redeveloped.
Due to the agricultural zoning of the balance of the tract, the 29 acres, there is only one other lot that could be created out of that agricultural zone at this point without having to seek a rezoning action. Mm-hmm. That rezoning action could take the form of an R1 request. It could take the form of an R2 request, at which point then we would be evaluating the merits of those two requests and assigning protected land areas needed in order to address the increase potentially in development intensity.
So the stream buffer is a no-go zone?
In general, yes. And then tree preservation areas, depending on how, again, you have to maintain 25% climax forest on the site, generally speaking. I think they have exceeded that exceptionally on this property by retaining more than they need in order to maintain the natural beauty of the property and its cover. Again, the area that we're looking at developing, I refer to it as the less environmentally impacted area. It's still environmentally impacted, but not as much as the bluff areas that are on the property or that really aren't developable because of the other features that exist that traverse the land itself.
So in any previous Board of Adjustment decisions relating to this cottage standard, were there decisions based on preliminary plats that have not been approved?
Yes. I mean, this is a standard, this is the standard process. The preliminary platting, while it has been reviewed and recommended for approval by the Planning Commission, it has not been approved by City Council. And as I pointed out, it cannot be approved by City Council until this body permits the dimensional standards to be used. The plat that has been reviewed was conditionally approved by the Planning Commission on this body's action being completed. And part of the purpose behind that is that when a zoning action comes in to rezone land to R2, which is a duplex zoning district, the concerns that have been expressed previously is that there is no general assurance to the public that it will not be developed with duplexes. And so what the applicant has, what the applicants in those instances have been counseled to do is to submit a preliminary plat showing an intent of development. The preliminary plat is reviewed concurrently with the rezoning request, so there is context. The preliminary plat, however, as I noted, cannot be approved by council until this body has completed its work. And because of the way that our procedural requirements exist, we cannot bring forward a request for cottage development standards prior to the property being entitled for R2 zoning. If that provision did not exist, you would be in the driver's seat of saying this property, subject to an R2 approval, could be used, and we would not be where we're at. But because we require zoning entitlement to be provided first, then the board, and then the platting action, what we have done internally to ensure that there is a context for the development, the neighbors surrounding a proposed cottage development, we require that the preliminary plat be presented, which shows intent. A developer generally, from what we have found, is not inclined, once they have received an approval of a preliminary plat and a rezoning action, they are less inclined to withdraw their approach to do standard R2 development, because obviously they stand to lose 2,000 square feet in lot variance, reduction in lot area, and therefore they lose the opportunity to be able to develop, in most instances, a more intense development on a more typical acreage. In this particular instance, again, the alternative here was they're looking at preserving a higher percentage of the land generally and developing more intensely on that is more developable. And hence, it's what we would refer to as basically density shifting. You're shifting density from areas that are not otherwise really developable to the area that is. And so it's a balancing act, in essence. We gain environmental benefit, but we also retain, the developer retains the opportunity to be able to yield, in essence, the same development outcome, but just in a smaller land area with smaller lots.
So you had referenced that if we were to approve this or make a motion to approve it, you had some wording that you suggested.
So underneath the potential board action in second to last paragraph or below the second paragraph are the dimensional standards that should be in staff's opinion to ensure that there is definite clarity on what the minimum setback requirements are. Or I should say setback and dimensional.
Staff report that you're talking about.
Yes. The staff report. Yes. Those are the standards, which would have a front yard of 20 feet, a side yard of 6, a rear yard of 10 feet, and a minimum lot width of 30. Those are the standards that we would request that, to provide clarity to the application, these be a part of the motion that is made.
So I'd like to make a motion if we're at that point.
I actually have another question. It's kind of I would like to have some technical clarification. So in the four previous times that we've applied the conditional use permit for these type of cottage development standards, the argument's always been made that we're increasing housing diversity, increasing income, integrated neighborhoods, and affordable housing options that wouldn't otherwise have existed. And so I'm wondering, What does increased housing diversity mean in this context? Because I suspect all of these homes will be more or less equivalent. I don't want to say they're going to be exact copies of each other, but there will be significantly less diversity than, say, Benton Stevens neighborhood or something like that. And then secondly, what is an income integrated neighborhood?
So, bunch of planning speak. You're asking me to unravel the mysteries of my profession. So when we talk about housing diversity, housing diversity is not just the subdivision itself. We're looking at that from a broader perspective. We have R1 lots that are 7,000 plus square feet. You may have R2 lots that range from 5,000 square feet to 7,000 or greater. These lots are basically going to fall somewhere within that range, and therefore it's creating a greater level of lot style diversity. It creates an opportunity for greater diversity in housing size. So that's what we mean when we talk about housing diversity. Now, income diversification, again, it's related, almost directly related to the housing diversity provisions that we talk about. Larger homes are going to normally be constructed and occupied by folks of greater means, whereas smaller homes on smaller lots normally are going to be capable to be obtained by those that have lesser means. And therefore, what we are doing is, while we may not be doing it within the same, within the immediate confines of this 22.26 acres, we are looking at it when you look at the broader perspective of what surrounds the neighborhood. We are creating that income integration and diversity. So we are bringing in other individuals that have different means by which to afford traditional housing. These are all single family. There's nothing within our code that prohibits a single family home from being a long-term rental. So these may be rental houses. That may concern people. However, a home is a home is a home in our mind. It is an opportunity for somebody to be able to move into something that is not an apartment. And it is, again, meeting general objectives of the city to create housing availability of different styles and different price points. I would not suggest, and I don't think Mr. Harrington or the applicant is, that these are all going to be just $250,000 homes. Some may be customized, there may be more. And this particular, and some may be larger than what the minimum lot size is that they want to do. They may have to do that. But those are the types of things where there may be diversity. What I will tell you is we as a city staff with our Planning and Zoning Commission are working on standards that will allow this style of housing to occur more organically within residential zoning classifications without going through these processes. And we are looking at a variety of different ways to be able to do that to ensure that the general objectives of creating neighborhood diversity can be incorporated. This is a very challenging process for some folks. The Planning and Zoning Commission believes that it can be improved, and that is what we're endeavoring to do. But right now, this is what we have to work with.
Okay, thank you. All right, any further questions of staff? Okay, we usually give the applicant an opportunity to come up and make any final comments or rebut anything that you might have heard that you would like to.
Heard extensive testimony on everything. I don't think I have anything else to add at this time.
Thank you. With that, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing. Would the legal department like to make any comments?
I'd like to introduce into evidence certified copies of the following ordinances: Section 29-1.11A, 29-2.2, subsection 2, including table 29-2.3, 29-4.1, including table 29-4.1-1, and ordinance number 025630, and 29-6.4. This is a request for approval of optional development standards pursuant to 29-6.4J. Pursuant to that section, the board may approve an application for optional development standards if it determines the following criteria have been met. One, the use of optional development standards is consistent with the intended character of the area as shown and described in the city's adopted comprehensive plan. Two, the use of the optional development standards will provide adequate off-street parking for the permitted uses available in the zone district where the property is located and will not result in significant off-site parking on sections of local neighborhood streets other than those immediately fronting the applicant's property. And three, the use of the optional development standards will not create additional traffic congestions or risk to public health and safety in the surrounding area. The ordinances also state that the board may not approve an application requesting application of some but not all of the optional development standards listed in the applicable tables for the zone district where the property is located.
So moved. Are there any board members that would like to discuss or have any comments for the board?
I mean, personally, I think the city needs this. I think we need housing in this price range. So I think this is part of what we hope that developers would come up with, areas to do this type of or this size development with this price range. I think when we first started thinking about it, it would have been a $150,000 house. Now it's a $250,000 house, but that's not the developer's fault. So I, for one, think it's this is part of Columbia being Columbia, is to have this type of or this price point of housing, and to be able to get something brand new with all new features and all new appliances for that price range, I think would be, I think a lot of people would take advantage of that. So I would be in favor of this.
Comments? I'll just say that I hear the environmental concerns, but I also know that there are the majority of the trails in our trail system do abut housing in some way or another, and so it's a challenge for me to sit here and say that we shouldn't allow this development or that development because it abuts a trail, and furthermore, by right, they can develop this, so it's really just a question of density and whether this meets larger goals of the city. I do have one concern about this type of development in general, and that is that it tends to be monochromatic, so to speak. And I would like to see future developers try to incorporate homes with greater income diversity potentials so that we don't have neighborhoods of just one level of income. We have a mixed area so that we're not Old Hawthorne or one fixed type of income. It would be beneficial to the city and beneficial to the people that live together to have big homes, small homes, medium homes. I think that's really missing in Columbia. So I know you guys have something in mind already, but I would hope that others watching would hear this. Well, if there's no other comments.
I'll just say I agree, or I sympathize with the environmental concerns. And the good thing about this property is there's some that is, part of it is not developable. So we know there's going to continue to be some wildlife, some, along Forum when the MKT went in, there used to be wild turkeys there and deer all the time. You know, if anybody has seen one of those creatures in the last 20 years, I'd be astounded. But that's the price we pay for Columbia growth, and what people like Columbia because of the trails. And so the good thing about this is there is some undevelopable part. The buildings will not be within 300 feet. And so hopefully it will, and there will not be parking in the parking lots for the park. It will be contained in its own subdivision. So I agree, Columbia needs more housing. And it's private property, so I do intend to support this.
Yeah, I'd like to comment on the concern over deterioration of the trail, wildlife. I live along West Boulevard. There's some homes that have been there 75 years. There's deer wandering around in people's yards. And there's, of course, there's also concerns over foxes getting after people's pets. So personally, I think any danger to the wildlife would be minimal, in my opinion. So, I mean, they were here first, and we may push them aside for a little bit, but I think they'll be all right, my opinion.
Well, do you have any comments, Kitty?
I think this is the best we can do. It's going to be developed. And at least you're getting some green, and you're getting a pretty fair buffer between the trail and the development. And it will offer housing that is not available. And if you live where I live, I see a lot of homeless folks walking by every day. I mean, they're not going to be able to live here, but somebody will.
Okay.
So
on that, I would like to make a motion in the affirmative, because we always make motions in the affirmative.
All right.
To approve the use of the cottage optional development standards on the property addressed as 2899 Creasy Springs Road to facilitate the development of a 118-lot subdivision to be known as Bennett Ridge, as required by Section 29-6.4J of the Unified Development Code, subject to the following minimum standards: a 25-foot front yard setback, a 6-foot side yard setback, a 10-foot rear yard setback, and a minimum lot width of 30 feet.
Did you say 25?
If I said 25, I meant 20.
I'll second that.
Okay. Mr. Zenner, would you please take the roll? Oh, wait. Is there any discussion on the motion? Okay. Mr. Zenner, please take the roll.
So a motion has been made and seconded to recommend approval of request number 119-2024. 219-2024, my staff reported the wrong number on it. Cottage optional development standards on property addressed as 2899 Creasy Springs Road, specifically the 22.26 acres that is zoned R2, subject to the front yard setback being 20 feet, side yard setback being 6 feet, rear yard setback being 10 feet, and the minimum lot width being 30 feet. Mr. Norgaard?
Yes.
Ms. Hammond?
Yes.
Mr. Minshew?
Yes.
Ms. Rogers?
Yes.
And Mr. Old?
Yes.
5 votes yes, motion carries. So ordered by board.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
And thank you, Mr.
Thanks for coming
Cannon.
Out.
Thank you.
And for your trail patrol.
Thank you. All right, we're going to move on to public comments. If there's anybody from the public wishing to speak, now's your chance. Seeing none, staff, do you have any comments? We'll have board comments. Any comments from staff?
So we will not. Your next meeting tentatively is scheduled for November 12th. The October meeting deadline came and went with no applications being submitted. We are on track at this point to probably have as many meetings as we had in 2023. So I will inform you after the end of the month if we do have a meeting in November. It is possible that we may have another cottage housing request come before us. We do see a number of these now starting to come in. So we will keep you apprised of that. And I think, to Mr. Norgaard, to your point relating to enhancing economic diversity, what I can tell you is the Planning Commission, in its work on small lot integration, which is the project that they are working on, one of the issues that we have discussed at great length is how do we promote integration of various lot sizes and structure sizes to get to that exact point. So it is something that if this process is moved into a more standard approach subject to approval of platting, it would in essence have some other criteria, use specific standards as we refer to them in our development code, that would then start to, I think, do a little bit better job in facilitating some of the broader goals and objectives of the comprehensive plan, as you were alluding to. So we're on it, we're thinking about it. We're also thinking about architectural diversity and housing style diversity as additional supplemental standards to ensure that we don't get monochromatic neighborhoods, and we do have a variety of options available.
I just know that, you know, in towns like Denver, Colorado, whenever they do a new high-rise building, for instance, they're obligated to make 15% or some number accessible to less in lower income families, not necessarily low income, but lower income families.
Housing affordability requirements.
Yeah.
And again, that is something that has been discussed at the city level. It is not an active item with what we're doing right now with the integration project, but that does not necessarily mean that addressing that topic will not come up at a later date. It is obviously a very, very critical element right now with inside the city's housing crisis that we are in, that attainable housing, and we prefer not to use the word affordable because affordable has a tremendous amount of baggage associated with it. What is affordable for one may not be affordable for another, so attainable is the term that's used generally at the Planning Commission, and one of the things we're struggling with is creating housing that may be attainable. And the way to arrive at that is figuring out how do you create diversity to allow for various price points to be able to be built and densities to be able to be created while not creating impacts, excessive negative impacts within the built environment. And so part of the study that you all are aware that we are working on with H3, our consultant, as it relates to the central city area and the design guidelines, one of the outcomes of that will hopefully be design standards that will address issues associated with integration of housing styles and topologies. Our activities that we're working with the Planning Commission are trying to create options, not necessarily design-based options, but options for lot creation, which doesn't exist in our code. So multiple people are trying to address the issue, and housing affordability, as Mr. Minshew pointed out, is not necessarily an area that we control. It's the economy, it's costs, and what used to be $150,000 is now $200,000 to $250,000. That's the new affordable, and that unfortunately is not affordable, as we all are aware, for many of our residents. And so ways to create opportunities for them to have a piece of the American dream is something that we all are trying to work toward. But that is what we're working on from a staff perspective at a much higher level. For right now, we're going to continue to bring you all these cottage requests because that's the way my code's set up. So I will hopefully be able to do better to address some of your questions with the next application.
Well, I have to admit, I don't mean to go backwards, but I understand your words about instead of saying affordable, you say attainable. I am somewhat disappointed that 250 to 300 is in that class of what some people call affordable. But
I think the cost to build a house is $170 a square foot or something like that, and that's at the low end. So houses.
Well, and then, you know, the point I was going to make is that if you put this density in Old Hawthorne, these houses would sell for $400,000. You could not say, oh, they can't sell. They have to sell for $250,000 because once it's built, the price of a house is based on its appraisal, and appraisal is based on sale of like homes within a given period of time. So you can wish all you want that someone would go in and build a neighborhood with $1 million homes and $250,000 homes, but that home wouldn't be $250,000 if it was next to $1 million home.
That's not the way the economy is. What I'm getting at is R1 and R2 commingled, instead of having one R1 carbon copy footprint, you know, one after the other, like
understand.
A suburban nightmare.
But having been a developer and been in the building business my whole life, when you look at a piece of property, I'll guarantee you nobody ever looks at it that way and says, I think because you can't control the price once it started to sell, you can't control it. I mean, you can't control. You could control what you offer it at the beginning.
Sure.
But
I understand that point. You can't control the market. We're not trying to control the market, but we can control the supply to some extent through the zoning regulations.
Yeah. But even within that, enough government's enough government, and I don't want to be a part of anything that says we're going to control what gets built.
I'm not saying you control, but you can always put carrots or you can use sticks.
I understand.
And
We got enough government. We got enough government as it is, so.
Traditionally, we use the sticks, but, you know, there's probably opportunities to encourage the kind
I know,
of
and
development
then, and then people would complain because you gave money to developers as a carrot. So, I mean, I was telling you, I've been doing this for 40 years, so.
Okay. Any comments from the board? Was that all the comments?
That was all the comments I had. I mean, all right. I've already transitioned to the comments of the board.
Well, I'd like to ask, you know, these people
very
came
nice
out
people.
To speak, and they had no idea what this development looked like and how it sat on the land.
I agree.
Can we, and usually the applicant brings overheads, and so the public could see it, and usually there's nobody to see it. But in this case, there were, what, five people. Can we put on the application that at least one overhead of the development be provided? Put that on there?
The application, Ms. Hammond, is publicly available from our website.
But, you know, Pat, that's not okay. These people didn't even know it went through planning and zoning already. You know, they just saw that sign.
I don't, and there was no sign on the trail, so I don't know what sign they were referring to.
Oh, on Creasy Springs, that this was a...
If they were driving to the parking lot that they were concerned was going to be overwhelmed, the sign has a telephone number on it. And so if they had a question, they had a concern, I never received a phone call. And we publish our agenda. It is on the city calendar. It is available for the public to view. Historically, this body has never had a PowerPoint presentation provided to it. And, you know, again, I am asked to do a lot, and I do not have always the opportunity to be able to have the time to produce something anticipating that the public may be here. If you are asking me to ask the applicant to provide me something,
Applicant
has provided me something. They are required to provide what you received in your packet.
Okay.
And they're not going to come and produce a PowerPoint presentation. They chose not to do that this evening. That is the applicant's responsibility.
I was just asking if we could ask the applicant if they would provide one in case there's members of the public. Not asking you to do it, if we could put it there. And I'm just asking, is that
the question I have, though, the question I have on that, and it's not a horrible idea, but that what they're providing us is not what they're getting approved. So they would put together a PowerPoint presentation on something that's not what's going to go in front of necessarily what's going to go in front of planning and zoning, right?
Most of the time, what comes here and what we see is what we approve or don't approve. You know, it's up to you all. You know, I think this is...
I mean, I think if I were presenting, I would present more I had a better chance of getting approved if I showed an aerial, if it showed something that was 10 feet above the, you know, what our concern was with the backyard was too close, if they brought those things. But that's to me just saying to them, be smart, do a good presentation. I think, is a different conversation. So,
okay.
Because you're going to get into...
It's entirely an applicant's choice to come prepared or not prepared. And they decided this evening to not prepare a PowerPoint. We have a PowerPoint, often a presentation that has been submitted by an applicant on many of these cases. That is an applicant's choice. To mandate that be prepared,
Here's a small compromise. You can say no, Pat, but if there were, you know, this is a static agenda, but the blue lines indicate that they're links. Is there a way that we could put some sort of a scanny code on here that an individual with a smartphone could come and scan this and to be taken to the live agenda, or at least the site that has the agendas?
No, this is a document that's prepared out of our agenda software material that does not have the ability for us to further doctor after it's produced.
Do you have a paper version that they get, that they submit of their plan, where you could just have it in, available in case?
I do. However, Rose, I am engaged in a whole variety of other things during my week, and preparing a presentation for what this body has received.
I'm not.
So the public can have an opportunity. Just.
I'm not suggesting you prepare a presentation. What I'm suggesting is, if they submit a paper version of it, if you could just bring it with you.
And that paper version is often oversized, and it is electronically available. And so
not everyone has access to the internet. Not everyone has access. I mean, it's great that we think they do, but not everyone does. But if we had a paper version that is already submitted that we don't have to make even copies of, that we just have, if a member of the public seems confused as to what's being proposed, let them view it.
But just my own personal opinion, I think it's great that these people showed up. I don't know that they would have ever looked at a computer or scanned a code. I don't think they would have. I think they wanted to come and be heard and say what they had to say. If there had been a picture on Creasy Springs that showed exactly what it is, I still think they would have showed up, because they, what their commentary was about how it was going to affect the trail and not how many buildings it was. So the other thing is, I don't think what's being suggested is something additional for you to do. I think it's really more a suggestion for whoever brings it. And we can't really suggest that to them, because they're either going to put a presentation together or they're not. So
we could suggest anything. I think we are getting to a point that you are asking for additional information, not only from staff, from applicants, that go beyond what is necessary for this body to often render a recommendation. And I think that we are teetering on a point where you are getting to be over demanding for what should be produced by somebody coming. You could have denied this application because they didn't have a presentation.
Right.
If that is where you feel you need to be, I we have never, some of the issues that I have had to deal with this year by requests, I've never dealt with. I've never dealt with the type of requests that I've received to generate mailing lists that differentiate a tenant from an owner, to now have to go and ask for applicants to produce PowerPoint presentations. So they have
one
that
diagram.
Well, Janet, you do not understand that in order to upload anything on this laptop here, it must be submitted in advance and screened. It can't just be plugged in. Other individuals that come into this chamber also have things that they are doing, and if they choose not to prepare, as Mr. Minshew is saying, that is their choice.
All right, we're going to go ahead and make a motion to close the meeting.
I make a motion to adjourn. Second. Thank you, everybody. Aye.